Hello, everybody. Today we have the pleasure of sitting down with Jared Pottinger with Des Case. Jared, how are you today?
I'm well, Kim. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, today, Jared is going to go into detail a bit of fluid condition management for hydraulics as the director of service for Des Case. But to start things out with, Jared, why is fluid condition management so important to hydraulics reliability?
Well, you know, assuming that a hydraulic system is well designed, then fluid condition is the single biggest factor in reliability. The most common problems we see with modern hydraulic systems are valve failures, especially when we have servo valves or proportional valves. Probably the second biggest reliability concern is pump failures. And both of those things are directly tied to fluid condition. Both the cleanliness of the oil in terms of its particle count, as well as its chemical condition, or what we like to call the fluid health, which means that the oil is, you know, if it's healthy, it means it's not oxidized or hasn't undergone thermal degradation, both of which are the primary root causes of varnish deposits. So both varnish deposits and particle contamination are the two biggest factors in hydraulic valve failure, and particle contamination is the single biggest factor that determines the rate of wear in the hydraulic pump, which is going to ultimately determine how long it runs in service. So it is of utmost importance when it comes to hydraulics reliability.
Thank you, Jared. And your team at Des Case, you guys just always have the greatest information on contamination. It's always been fascinating to me to really see how important everybody needs to take their lubrication, you know, system and make sure the fluid's clean. Someone not growing up in this industry, it's very interesting to see just the colors you guys come with and just the care that you are preaching and telling everyone to take on. So the next question is asking, how does one go about designing a condition management strategy?
Okay, well, you know, fundamentally, it's quite simple. The first step is to identify, you know, we say that we want the hydraulic fluid to be clean, but we really have to define what clean is. So to describe the cleanliness of a hydraulic fluid or any lubricating oil for that matter, we use the ISO contamination code, or what is more commonly referred to as the particle count. So that's really step one. The first thing we want to do is identify the desired particle count or contamination limit for the system. And that, you know, what that actual number is, there's not just one number for all hydraulics. It's going to be based on several factors. So one of those factors is, you know, what is the most sensitive component in the system? For example, servo valves would be the most sensitive component, and then proportional valves, and then probably followed by a variable flow piston pump. So there's quite a few different factors that go into determining how critical cleanliness is, or just how clean the oil needs to be. The system pressure is also a factor. So the higher the pressure, the more sensitive components, the cleaner we want the oil to be. So, you know, ideally, we'd set that goal around 15, 13, 10 for the particle count, or 16, 14, 10 might be a little more achievable. So that's the first step, and that's really easy. The second step is to identify what type of modifications, assuming we aren't achieving that cleanliness level now, what type of modifications are possible? You know, what is available to achieve that target? And those would be things like upgrading the system filters, adding additional filtration, such as a kidney loop system, and also employing contamination exclusion methods like good breathers and good seals on cylinders to prevent contamination, because it's really a bad balance. You know, you've got to be able to take contaminants out as quickly as they get in, and you can really address that on either end. And then finally, the third step is to be able to successfully measure the cleanliness of the oil. So we have to have a good oil analysis program, which starts with good sampling, and then we have to have good testing to make sure that we have a valid particle count, a valid picture of the fluid cleanliness in the system. So, you know, in practice, there's more to it than that, but it's, you know, in theory, it's really simple. You set targets, you identify the measures you can take to achieve those targets, then implement those in an appropriate fashion, and then effectively measure the direct results of those tactics.
Thank you. Can you explain to us why air is considered a contaminant and how would you deal with it?
Sure. And it's kind of interesting because while air is also should be considered a contaminant in the system, the nature of it is very different from water and moisture. You know, for one thing, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to keep air out of the system. You know, and depending upon how you look at it, there are some things you can do. But in general, there's always going to be air in contact with the oil inside the reservoir. So it's not really just kind of like with other contaminants. It's not a matter of preventing air altogether. It's a matter of minimizing the amount of air entrainment. So, you know, we talk about air as being a foam or free air or entrained air or dissolved, but it is entrained air that is really the problem. So entrained air are the little micro bubbles that are suspended in the oil that can give the oil kind of a cloudy appearance. And we're never going to eliminate them fully, but what we want to do is minimize it. And there's really a couple of different approaches to doing this. One is the design of the system. So hopefully the system is designed well to minimize aeration of the oil. So that means, you know, making sure that that return lines and supply lines are properly separated in the tank, making sure that return lines extend below the oil level so it's not causing, you know, kind of a waterfall effect, which would cause a lot of mixing. The use of baffles, diffusers, screens between the return and supply, you know, all of those are design considerations and even potentially modifications that we can do to minimize aeration and air entrainment in the oil. And then the other is the oil itself. And there's really two different things that we can look at there. One is the quality of the oil. A lot of people have a tendency to try to save money when it comes to selecting their hydraulic oil, you know, whereas they might be willing to spend a lot of money on other types of lubricating oils. They see hydraulic fluid as simply a power transmission media that's in the system, and they don't necessarily think about the critical performance characteristics of hydraulic oil. Well, one of those key performance characteristics is the oil's ability to release air, its tendency to release air. So there is a test called air release that is generally given in product data sheets for hydraulic fluid. And we want to make sure that we have good performance in that category. And then just as important as that is to manage the health of the oil. And again, that refers to the oil's chemical state. So if the oil is old, if it's dark, if it's cloudy, whether it's undergone oxidation or extensive thermal degradation, then as that fluid degrades, it is going to entrain more air. And the air itself actually causes fluid degradation. So in addition to, you know, causing problems with hydraulic function because of the air's compressibility, we also get a really significant problem with air, which we call microdieseling. So when those little air bubbles go through the hydraulic pump and they get compressed a lot and they get very, very hot, they can go up to about 1800 degrees Fahrenheit. And of course, 1800 degrees Fahrenheit is going to burn the oil. So that is a huge source and probably the most common source of thermal degradation in a hydraulic system, which leads to the varnish that builds up in our hydraulic valves and causes them to fail. So it is definitely worthwhile to try to control air in the system, both by fluid selection, by fluid health management, and then also making sure that we we control deposits and change oil on time.
Thank you. What does a good filtration setup for a hydraulic system look like?
Well, ideally, a hydraulic system would have three separate filters. So, you know, best practice would have a supply side filter. So that's going to be the filter that's right after the hydraulic pump. So it's going to be a high pressure filter. And because that's a high pressure filter, and it's what I refer to as an active filter. So it's filtering the active fluid that's circulating through the system. You know, the primary constraints on that system is to move a certain amount of fluid at a certain pressure. So there are limitations to what we can do with that filter. So in general, what I tell people is on the supply filter, we want to use as good a filter as we can. And by good, I mean the smallest pore size with the greatest efficiency that still meets or allows for system parameters to be met with respect to flow rate and pressure. Same thing for the return line. So return line filters are very efficient. It's a very good place to have a filter, because the majority, in the average hydraulic system anyway, the majority of particle contamination comes in through cylinders. So once that particle contamination enters the fluid, it's very concentrated in the return line. So the return line filter is a good place to basically knock out a lot of dirt before it kind of gets loose in the rest of the system. So again, that return line filter is going to have constraints on the amount of pressure drop that we can have and still maintain our flow requirements for the system. So in a given system, we may not be able to get the level of filtration that we'd like to see with just a supply side or a return side filter or both even. And that's where kidney loop filtration comes in. So a kidney loop, because it is a standalone system, you know, it's passive filtration. It's not affecting the flow rate. It's not affecting the pressure in the system or anything like that. For that reason, it is a much more cost-effective way, generally, to achieve a fine level of filtration. So let's say we wanted a level of filtration down to, say, 2 or 3 microns in a system. But the best filter that we can put on our pressure side without a significant modification would be a 10-micron filter. And then maybe on the return line, all we can do is a 15-micron filter without drastically modifying the system. So it's very easy to add a kidney loop on that system to act as our fine filter. So we've got kind of a medium filter, a coarse filter, and then a fine filter. And with a setup like this, it is generally always possible to achieve the types of cleanliness or the level of cleanliness that we'd like to see in typical hydraulic systems. And the one other type of filter that you see from time to time is a suction side filter. And those are generally considered by at least most of the hydraulics experts that I know to be a bad idea. So a filter on the suction side of the hydraulic pump theoretically makes a lot of sense because it's protecting the pump from contaminants that come through. But in the real world, the potential restriction that places on the incoming fluid to the pump can actually cause more damage than it prevents. So generally, suction side filters and even strainers for that matter are considered by many to be a bad idea. But we would like to see the supply side filter, return line filter, and a kidney loop on the system.
Thank you, Jared. And thank you for going into a bit of detail on that question. All right. Our last question here. How can you tell if these tactics are successful?
Well, that's really simple, because that's what oil analysis is for. And most people do oil analysis. You know, certainly those that are interested in reliability and interested in precision lubrication have some sort of oil analysis program that they do. But there are some misconceptions about oil analysis. A lot of people look at oil analysis as simply a way to tell if they need to change the fluid or not. Or they use oil analysis to closely watch wear debris. So they're trying to identify a pump failure. for example. But oil analysis can be way more than that. And really, the way we should look at oil analysis is as a proactive condition monitoring tool. Whereas most condition monitoring technologies are really aimed at predictive maintenance or predicting machine failures, oil analysis can be used more effectively in a proactive sense, where instead of looking for the results or the symptoms of a problem in the system, we can actually look for root causes, things that actually lead to wear and lead to hydraulic valve failures. So what I would be looking for is to make sure that, number one, I have the right oil in the machine. Number two, I want to know that the oil is healthy, meaning it's not oxidized, the additive concentrations are correct, etc. And then maybe most importantly, that the particle count is acceptable. And then also a close second there would be the moisture levels in the system. So that's really what oil analysis is for, is to tell me that everything's the way I want it to be. So, you know, if I do have a problem, if a filter fails, or if we have a water ingression problem, you know, we're actually identifying and then hopefully eliminating a root cause, as opposed to just merely being predictive and figuring out when a hydraulic pump is going to fail. So in order to do this effectively, we have to make sure we do the right tests. Obviously, we need to add a particle count. We also need an accurate test for moisture in the oil, which would be the Carl Fisher test, preferably a Carl Fisher with co-distillation is the test that we want to do on an anti-wear hydraulic oil, because without co-distillation, a lot of hydraulic fluid formulations will yield inaccurate results. So we want to make sure we do a good particle count and make sure we do a good moisture test on the oil so that we can actually measure it down to those low levels that we're really concerned with. So, you know, that's probably the easiest step in the whole process, assuming we have good testing and we have good oil sampling, which is really the first step in good oil analysis.
Jared, thank you so much for going into the fluid condition management of hydraulics today with us. Before we end, do you have any other information you would like to share with our users?
Well, I would say one thing, and precision lubrication has a lot of value in all lubricated machines, but it is particularly valuable in hydraulics for a couple of reasons. For one, hydraulics are, as we said in the beginning, the reliability of hydraulic systems is largely dependent on fluid condition, the fluid health, particle contamination, moisture contamination, etc. So not only do hydraulics benefit greatly from precision lubrication techniques, but it is also something that can be realized very quickly. So to explain that, we'll compare that to a gearbox. So if you do precision lubrication on a gearbox and you reduce the particle count, which is going to reduce the wear rate in the gearbox is going to last longer. So it might last, you know, 8 years instead of 5 years. And that's a good thing. That's certainly worthwhile. But in hydraulics, especially when it comes to valve failures, if you fix a hydraulic system, you fix lubrication in the hydraulic system, the improvements in reliability can be realized immediately. So if you clean a system up, get the varnish out, get the bad oil out, install good oil, maintain a healthy particle count, you're going to see a lot fewer hydraulic valve failures instantly. So if I was going to, and I do commonly recommend when people start down the road of precision lubrication, hydraulics is always the first place that you want to focus.
Thank you. Jared, if any of our readers today would like to get touch with you of anything they heard here or any content they have seen submitted by you on CBM Connect, how can they reach out to you?
Oh, they can certainly email me at jared.pottiger@deskcase.com. That's jared.pottiger@deskcase.com or services@deskcase.com. Either one of those will come directly to me.
Thank you. Again, Jared, thank you so much for your time here today. And thank you to our audience. Yes, thank you. And to our audience, again, if anybody would like to read more about any of this information or anything Jared has submitted for us, please go to cbmconnect.com. That is www.cbmconnect.com. And we will see you next time.